I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo! All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, 2 hours a day from 9 to 11 o'clock, offering up a safe space to the independent thinkers out there, beholden to no party and no politicians. Next hour, I'm expecting Jamison Haygood to come in. He's going to come in for the second hour. I think we've got a debate on the books, but I'll be honest with you, I'm not exactly sure what all we'll be talking about, but Jamison and I have had some conversations around the station, and some things that I told him, well, come on the show, we'll talk about them, and I think that's what we'll do next hour, so that's what I'm expecting. I did hear him, I hadn't talked to him today, but I did hear him on a show yesterday saying he would be on, so that should be interesting. In the meantime, I've got something about the California situation that won't be discussed anywhere else, so that's my forte. We'll talk about that in a second. Let me get my quotes of the day out of the way here. I love this one. This is from Johnny Rotten from the Sex Pistols. And I was a Sex Pistols fan. I guess I still am. They're a little bit like the Ramones. You know, if you get a good 5 songs from them, you've pretty much got their whole library. A little repetitive, but I like the rebel punk movement of the day, and I grew up. There was a punk movement was a little bit before my time, but not too much. But this is just funny to me how, you know, you watch some of these stars get older, these hardcore guys, and we've seen just the sissification of rock and roll, of really celebrities everywhere that are, they're out hawking vaccines and they're wigging everybody, you know, the PC, the wokeness, these kinds of things. Johnny Rotten calls it out here. Here's a quote. His real name is John Lydon, but he went by Johnny Rotten when he was with the Sex Pistols. He said, "I never thought I'd live to see the day when the right wing would become the cool ones giving the middle finger to the establishment, and the left wing becoming the sniveling, self-righteous, twatty ones going around shaming everyone." Amen, Johnny Rotten. It's horrific what's happened to the left. They used to put out so many good comedians. I was talking to somebody yesterday. The right is the one putting out all of the funny stuff now, just about. You look at the memes, and they don't even have to be about Joe Biden. They can be about coronavirus, everything. The right is putting out fantastic humor these days. The left is devolved into just a puddle of hysterical tears. So it is kind of interesting, but Johnny Rotten from the Sex Pistols understands that it is now the right wing that is giving the middle finger to the establishment, and the left wing are the establishment statists. And he's calling it out, so that's a good one. This particular quote for the day today is not necessarily good for this show, because I attempt to disprove this quote just about on a daily basis, but it's probably very accurate. This is by someone named Gustave Le Bon. He said, "The masses have never thirsted after truth. They turn aside from evidence that is not to their taste, preferring to deify error, if error seduce them. Whoever can supply them with illusions is easily their master. Whoever attempts to destroy their illusions is always their victim." I don't know when this quote was written, but someone whose name is Gustave Le Bon and written in that style, you've got to understand this is an old quote. I continue to be fascinated by the fact that human beings just can't really catch on to being misled. It's something, I guess, just in our DNA and our psyche that we cannot overcome. Today is the California recall of Gavin Newsom. We're going to find out if California can be saved. A state that probably has more going for it naturally great landmass. It's got mountains. It's got skiing. It's got oceans. It's got agriculture. It's got big cities. California has got it all. It's got weather. Ah, there are earthquakes and wildfires. I'm sure those can be annoying if you live there, but California is just one of the greatest states if you want to, if you can set aside the horrible politics of the state and just go visit and see some of the sights. I remember taking the trip up the PCH, Pacific Coast Highway, back in 1987, I believe it was. It was just such a beautiful drive. Had a convertible and drove all the way up from Los Angeles all the way up to San Francisco along the PCH, went to Napa Valley. California just has a ton to offer, and the Democrat politics there have just destroyed it economically, which has then destroyed it socially. Many parts of California are now just giant homeless encampments. They actually have apps to identify where the poop is on the sidewalks in San Francisco. That's where California has gone, under people like Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom, an effete elite who really doesn't care about his people whatsoever. We will see if California can dig deep and get rid of one of the most easily identifiable just political hacks leading their state in the wrong direction or not. I haven't even really seen a good guess. They said Gavin Newsom might have been polling to actually win this thing. I'd love to see a California under Larry Elder. Would really be pretty amazing to see. Larry Elder identifies as a libertarian, so he certainly gets points from that with me, but it would be really nice to see a new tone taken over California because, you know, we look at Mississippi and we think, well, we've got a tough road to hoe here. We stay at the bottom of a lot of statistics. If you could turn the key on California and roll back their horrific tax structure, regulatory structure, their adherence to all of the green stuff, which is just an economy-killing set of policies. I mean, California is just always primed to be one of the greatest states in the country and one of the greatest places in the world. So you can imagine if a good free market guy got a hold of California, what could be done? So we'll see. But I wanted to bring up something about California that really won't be discussed anywhere else. And do you know why California has been able to take such a hard left turn over the past few decades? I'm going to give you something to think about, because it is the problem that has plagued California, notwithstanding horrible leftist liberal policies that have destroyed it. But there's only one way that horrible leftist liberal politicians can get away with those kinds of things. And I am referring to the Death Star that I talk about a lot here on the show. We'll get to that when I come back. Stay with me. Radio is cleaning up the nation. They say you better listen to the right side of reason, but they don't give you any choice because they think that it's treason. So you had better do what you were told. So if I am reading the room right, of people on the right, of Republicans and conservatives, Trump supporters, all of the varying groups, if I'm reading the room right, a lot of people have concerns over encroaching socialism in this country, communism, these kinds of things. Am I right? Did I get that right? I mean, I'm worried about these things, but I also acknowledge that we've had huge socialist programs in this country for decades and decades and decades. A lot of very conservative senior citizens, and I'm not blaming you, but you're drawing your Social Security, drawing out much more than you ever put in. Using Medicare, you paid in premiums to that. If you have any kind of illness during your older years, you're taking out a lot more money than you ever put in. We know the cost of health care. So there is actually a linchpin to socialism. And this is kind of in reference to California. How has California become such a basket case financially? Same thing for Illinois, New York City, or New York State. These states that have got all of the advantages they could possibly have. And yet they somehow just enact policies that continue to just destroy their state. So California has lost. I meant to look it up and see what the exodus from California has been, but it was accelerated even more under their draconian lockdowns. But how do they even get the lockdowns done? There is a linchpin to all of these situations. Now, you can hate on California, and you can tweet out that when they when they vote to keep Gavin Newsom, which is a distinct possibility, that you wish it would just slide into the ocean. All of that hatred for all of these blue states does you absolutely no good. If you actually wanted to stem the tide of socialism, communism, any of these big government isms, there's a linchpin there. And it's the one I talk about all the time. It's the Federal Reserve. You know, California has loaded up on debt. They talk about the high tax rates out of California, but if the taxes were paying for everything, then California wouldn't have massive debt. Same for Illinois. I mean, Illinois has been, for quite some time, essentially bankrupt, insolvent. The only reason they're kept standing, and the only reason these Democrat administrations in these states or in cities are able to get away with their harebrained schemes, is because the Federal Reserve prints up a bunch of money. It is the linchpin. The only reason that California can load up on debt is because there's tons of money for people to loan to California because the Fed prints it up. And the thing is that the Federal Reserve, they make it even more attractive for states like California to load up on debt because the Federal Reserve, your central bank, one of the planks of the Communist Manifesto, I might add, that nobody wants to talk about. Sean Hannity doesn't talk about the Federal Reserve. Why do you waste our time? Didn't you see AOC's dress last night at the Met Gala? I did. Talk about ridiculous and just tone deaf. The woman wears a tax the rich dress to a $50,000 a ticket. Is that what it was? Met Gala? No, she's really fighting for the people, isn't she? Well, that's all the consideration I'm going to give that. If you actually want to tackle things like socialism and communism and you want to see these blue states get their comeuppance, you've got to pay attention to the central bank that makes all of these things possible. The central bank crushes interest rates, keeps interest rates near zero, so that states like California, see, California, Illinois, they're so fiscally irresponsible with their money that most people wouldn't loan them money because unless they got a high interest rate. They would demand, oh, I'm going to loan money to California? I've seen their books. That's pretty risky. They're going to have to pay me pretty heavy interest for me to loan them my money. But then the Federal Reserve comes in. They just smash interest rates down and allow California to sell bonds. I haven't looked at any California munis lately, but, you know, 2 or 3%. California, based on their balance sheet, should probably be paying 10 to 12% on their debt, which would cause some reckoning there. Their budgets couldn't allow for that huge interest payments on massive debt. Same things for Illinois and other states around the country. The Federal Reserve is what enables left-wing politics to stand for so long. You want to end socialism? You want to stop socialism? You want to stop communism? You got to end the Fed. Both of them are impossible without endless money printing. Or you can just keep screaming at people in the streets and online. That seems to not be working, but it seems to be the preferred thing to do. It's very interesting to me that people do not understand how important this institution that prints money out of thin air. California just got some. What did they get during coronavirus? This is a state. Now, Mississippi is the same way. Mississippi got a big windfall from COVID because the Fed just printed up. So all of the mistakes that these states make and their bad policies that are not financially sound, not at all sustainable, all of them are just papered over by money the Federal Reserve prints up and by the artificially low interest rates that the Fed maintains. Now, you sacrifice. I think inflation came in. Consumer price index came in something around, 5.3%, something like that. You're getting 0.5% on your savings. You essentially lost 5% of your money over the past year sitting in a savings account, courtesy of the Federal Reserve. You see, it affects you and your pocketbook. It affects the swing. Leftist politics, leftist systems, leftist policies, leftist systems, they cannot survive without huge amounts of influx of debt-based money. And so if you want to actually find ways to fix this, to stop socialism and communism in its tracks, it's not to just stay on Breitbart all day. That might give you a warm and fuzzy feeling, but Breitbart's not telling you about the Federal Reserve either. None of these elites are talking about the Federal Reserve because they all benefit. The reason Sean Hannity doesn't talk about the Federal Reserve is because Sean Hannity likes the system. It's just fine the way it is. What's he making, $20 million a year? And that's because a bunch of corporations, including, you know, Fox itself and advertisers, everything's just awash in all of this funny money cash. Corporations borrowing at record paces. And so they've got all this money to spend on media. It is just an incestuous system. So the people at the very top that are leading the conservative movement just don't talk about the Federal Reserve and central banking. I'll read a quote to you, though, from Thomas Jefferson for you constitutionalists out there who just don't seem to get around to understanding that the Fed is the linchpin to so many of these problems. You don't like the wars? You can't have a warfare state without the Federal Reserve. They would have to raise the money from people. People would have to donate to the wars, much like they did the war bonds for World War II. People came out of their pockets to help fund the war effort in World War II. There was some other debt accumulated, but any of you going to go out there and buy bonds to keep Afghanistan going, to keep Iraq going? Here is a quote from Thomas Jefferson. You think I'm hyperbolic about the Federal Reserve? Why do you keep talking? What's this obsession with this? Rush Limbaugh never talked about the Federal Reserve. Why do you waste our time? This is Thomas Jefferson. He said, "I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around the banks will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. The issuing power should be taken from the banks and restored to the people to whom it properly belongs." Thomas Jefferson believed that things like the Federal Reserve, our current banking system right now, were more dangerous than any standing army. All of you out there who are thinking that Russia is this existential, even China. You're not going to change Chinese ways. You're not going to change them. You're not going to face off with them militarily, or you shouldn't want to. You could outcompete them if we had an actually sound economy here. But you can affect the fact that we are run by a central bank that is the linchpin to all of these things. You can't have the warfare state. You can't have the welfare state. I don't think you could run a California or an Illinois. The day of reckoning, the day of insolvency, the day of bankruptcy, the day of consequence would come to those states very, very quickly if you didn't have the printing presses in the Eccles building up there in Washington, D.C., just funneling money to them. The Fed's just handing money hand over fist, helping to fund Medicare, helping to put more and more people on dependency around this country. You couldn't do it. You could try. It just wouldn't last very long. As it stands right now, it will last for decades, has lasted for decades. Eventually, it will fail, and it will be catastrophic. At some point, the Federal Reserve will lose control of everything, but by then they may own everything. Let me say this again from Thomas Jefferson. If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around it will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. So we knew this 250 years ago. That this would be the consequence, but I'm telling you, it is a huge, just a bait and switch, a distractionary thing to get you all exercised about red state versus blue state. You want to stop the blue states? You go to the Death Star. Luke Skywalker knew it. You want to take down the evil empire? There's just one place you go. You got to get your shots down there. So start looking for politicians that talk about these things. It's not going to be Michael Guest, Roger Wicker, or Cindy Hyde Smith. But you start electing some people who understand the danger of what we're seeing and the road it's taking us down. Look, eventually the Fed may fail on its own, but it's going to take us all down with it. I heard for about 3 years as I was questioning Donald Trump as he was demanding the Federal Reserve reduce interest rates and he was signing trillion-dollar budget deficits. And I had people telling me, "Mike, you don't understand. Trump is taking over the Fed. He's going to abolish it. He's going to return us to a gold standard. He's going to do this. He's going to do that. I got to tell you, I'm not seeing it. The Fed is more powerful than it has ever been. I think it is still buying up $160 billion a month in bonds. You want to know why house prices are so high? Why our kids are locked out of first-time home ownership? It's the Fed. You know, I've threatened to do shows where I'll just take in calls. I say, you name a problem and I'll give you the government root of that problem. I think that the same thing could be said for the Federal Reserve. You give me an issue out there that people are dissatisfied with, I can probably trace it back to a central bank problem. So if you want to see California return to some normalcy, you want to stop the encroaching socialism on us, you end the Federal Reserve and this funny money printing. They won't be able to get away with it. They can't close businesses. They can't close down Main Street. Because people would be, the only way they got away with closing down Main Street and destroying businesses, costing people tens of millions of jobs, was because the Fed was there. They go, well, we'll just print out some little checks for them here or there. We'll put a few people on some bennies. You got a bunch of people out there that can't find workers for their retails and their restaurants. They cannot operate normal business hours because they can't find staff. Why is that? Why is that? We've got so many people unemployed. I think there's 9 million unemployed. There's 10 million available jobs. Why is that? Because the Federal Reserve printed up a bunch of money and gave people little benefits. Juiced unemployment, $300 extra dollars a week, was originally $600 extra a week. None of those things would have been possible. The problems that we're seeing right now with our Main Street businesses that cannot find people to hire, Federal Reserve. So, it's why I talk about it. Pretty constantly, huh? I'll be right back. Getting born in the state of Mississippi. Papa was a copper and a mama was a hippie. In Alabama. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, expecting Jameson Haygood in for the second hour. I think we're going to have a debate. And we'll call it Fight Club. I love a good debate. So if we have one of those, Jameson and I are also working on some stuff together. So plenty to talk about next hour. I can't let this Fed stuff go. I was just curious. I don't know what even led me to this during the break, but I was looking up. You want to know why we spend $10,000. The Mississippi Center for Public Policy, this is an older article, but it just shows the increase in amount that Mississippi spends per student each year on education. This chart that I've got in front of me here shows up to 2017. It was $10,034. 5 years earlier, it was $8,920. We all know we spend more and more money on education every single year. The results get worse and worse for the vast majority of the schools. Why is that happening? Federal Reserve. I mean, it's just, it's everywhere. It is the problem. And we just cannot seem to understand this. They love to give us the Chinas to hate, the Irans to hate, the Democrats or the Republicans to hate. They love to misdirect us on all of this stuff. We've got this one thing. Again, it's the linchpin. That thing that if you pull it, everything else comes apart. You don't like the system. You don't like the establishment. You don't like the corruption in this country. Boom. That's your best line of attack. It's not the next election or the one after that or the one after that or the one after that. Republicans love to spend, too. You want to know why you got $1 trillion a year military? Federal Reserve. You want to know why you can get a tax cut while the debt goes up and you get a tax cut today and you lay the debt that's accrued because of the tax cut on your grandchildren's head? So selfish. You know how you can do that? Federal Reserve. It's just in everything. It really is sad. With the California stuff, though, they already are having ballot problems out there. You know, this is just, I guess this is really, is this our first big test of election fraud since the 2020 elections? And it looks like this one's going to be a problem as well. Residents of San Fernando Valley, California, were shocked after showing up to vote in the state's gubernatorial recall election, only to be told by polling station workers that they had already voted. 86-year-old Estelle Bender, a Republican, said she wasn't the only person who was told incorrectly that they had already voted. She said the man next to me was arguing the same thing. So they've already got voting problems out there. I mean, you know, they've also got people in other states, people that have moved out of California. I think I saw a story where some people in moved to New Hampshire, got three absentee or mail-in ballots to their address in New Hampshire. This is Woodland Hills, California. It says about 70% of the votes at this location have been shown as already cast when they were not. Election official says, right. It's got a video here, but I don't dare play it because I have not screened it for any FCC violating words. But, you know, it was a couple months ago, I guess, they found somebody with 300 ballots in their car or 3,000 ballots in their car. Some drunk drug addict passed out in his car with a bunch of ballots in his car. So this is our first test. We're going to see, is this going to be the first mess that we have following 2020, where we just find out even more that our voting systems are not in the least bit secure? We'll see. Larry Elder will mount his challenges. The media will paint him as a sore loser and say there's nothing to see here. I mean, we really have got quite a mess when it comes to our voting systems. But how about a win? Let's talk about a win, something positive. Spectrum Health, an extensive hospital system in Western Michigan, has just declared, you just got to love this, it's like a return to sanity. I'm looking for sanity anywhere I can find it these days. Spectrum Health, this is in Western Michigan, has just declared that prior employees, including nurses, doctors, everybody, won't be required to get the vaccine if they have already been infected. Holy cow, they're talking about natural immunity. The decision, which was made by the hospital system's medical exemption committee, was first reported by the Detroit News. Individuals with a positive PCR or antigen test, plus a positive antibody test from within the past 3 months, can claim the exemption. This is using, at least the last 100 years of science, knowing that naturally occurring antibodies are protective against a virus, and that. We finally have a health system. It's not at UMC. They still are pretending like natural immunity is outdated. That natural immunity, that's so 2019. Like, now we've got mRNA. It supersedes all. Spectrum Health will grant temporary exemptions from its employee vaccine mandate to individuals who can prove they have naturally acquired immunity. And there's something down in here. So the West Michigan Hospital System, which is in the process of merging with the Southfield-based Beaumont Health, will grant an exemption to those who have a positive PCR. Here it says, this is a quote from one of the guys there, or a statement from the hospital. It said, while we still recommend vaccination for people with prior COVID-19 infection, yeah, they can't be all good. Of course, they have to stick that in there. This is on the heels of studies that have shown you have 6 to 13 times better protection from naturally occurring antibodies than from the vaccine. But this hospital group goes, but well, you still should have the vaccine. Anyway, they say, according to this new research, there's increasing evidence that natural infection affords protection from COVID-19 reinfection and severe symptoms for a period of time. And then the statement said this. Current studies are not clear on how long natural immunity protects from reinfection. I think that last line is important because really what I believe that admits is, okay, we started having people get COVID when back, probably in January, probably as late 2019. We just didn't know what it was. But we certainly have people who were diagnosed as being COVID-19 positive in March of 2020. What is that, 16, 17 months ago? And they're saying that the studies are not clear on how long natural immunity protects. I believe it's because they're probably testing people who got some of the original diagnoses and they've still got antibodies. So they can't find anybody. You know, if the people from 2020 who had previous infections, had recovered from COVID, were tested and they didn't have antibodies anymore, you can bet your bottom bippy, as my father used to say, they'd be reporting that. Natural immunity only lasts 10 months, 12 months, 11 months. They would be doing the studies. I believe that what they're finding is, holy crap, I mean, everybody who's recovered from this stuff has got the antibodies. and I don't want to repeat myself, but for anybody who wasn't listening, the people who were exposed to SARS back in 2003 still have the antibodies 18 years later. That's how natural immunity works. They know this. Anthony Fauci knows this. Thomas Dobbs knows this. They've chosen to ignore it. But at least Spectrum Health, while still dumb enough to say, even if you have naturally occurring antibodies, you still need to get the vaccine, at least they are willing to allow their employees some level of wiggle room to say, look, I don't need the shot. I am immune from the disease. This is actually a pretty big win. I'd be very interested to know what led to this. I find it hard to believe that any medical establishment in this country spontaneously regained their common sense, but I would imagine they might have had a bunch of nurses and doctors that said, we're about to take off. Good luck with that, when they were trying to force them to get an experimental shot. And so they tried to find a way out to save face. All they really did was just acknowledge the reality of natural immunity. But it is a win. It is a win. I've got a couple other clips related to vaccines and COVID. I'll take a look at these. I actually made the notes before I tagged them. I'm going to take a look at what they are during the break, and we'll come right back, and we'll all be surprised by what I've got next. Stay with me. You know, I talked yesterday about the stories about the mobile morgues, and I broke down three stories after a friend of mine had really kind of screamed into text. At least that's how I read it. You know, you have to interpret the tone on a text, because we've decided we don't communicate as human beings anymore. We just text little snippets, and you have to try to decipher the mood they were in when they sent it. I felt it was a very aggressive text towards me, who was the only unvaccinated person on the text thread. In my area, they're pulling up mobile morgues. So many people are dying. That may be a direct quote from the thing. And so I researched it and find out that the mobile morgues in three different stories in that area, one including the hospital he was talking about, one of the hospitals said they just did it because they had a lot of cases, but they weren't really saying that the people who were dying were COVID patients. One of them was that there was a COVID outbreak at a funeral home, not at the hospital. Wasn't a bunch of people at the hospital dying. It's that the funeral home wasn't open to receive bodies, so they had to store them somewhere. And it wasn't because it killed everybody at the funeral home. They just did what they do, right? You get a couple of cases, they close down the funeral home. And another one was because they normally can hold four bodies, and they had six. Didn't say that all six people had died of COVID. It's just they happened to have six bodies that day, so they brought in a refrigerated truck. My point being, to repeat that story again from yesterday, the numbers and the headlines have just been so misleading for the past 16 months. Now, even The Atlantic, the second time The Atlantic has come out, you know, certainly no right-wing rag, according to the mainstream media. This is one of these elite establishment publications. They ran a story on Tuesday saying essentially that they've looked at the numbers, particularly they looked at VA records. And so there is maybe some difference there, but, you know, veterans are people too. So they looked at VA records, and they found essentially that over the past 16 months, 50% of the hospitalizations called COVID were either mild or asymptomatic COVID hospitalizations. 50%. The study they looked at found that from March of 2020 to January of 2021, 36% of COVID cases in the hospital were mild or asymptomatic. And let me explain what that means. And if you get a little lost in that, it means these are the people who came in for something else but tested positive for COVID. They came in because they had a heart attack, but they tested positive for COVID. So they get put in the COVID wing. They're called a COVID hospitalization, but they have no symptoms from it. They just had a positive PCR test. These are the hospitalizations. And you think about every one of these hospital administrators has gone out there and just told you they're getting overwhelmed. I'm not saying they're not busy, But I've done stories on this show from 2018 where New York City was putting hospital beds in Central Park because the flu season was so bad. It happens. If the medical establishment would teach people how to keep themselves healthy with good nutrition and vitamin D supplementation or standing in the sun for free for 20 minutes, we'd come out with better outcomes. They refused to do that. But so they found from March 2020 to January 2021, 36% of the hospitalizations that are reported. That is the big headline on all of the news channels, right? How many people have been hospitalized? The hospitals are being overrun. From January 2021 to June 2021 this year, during the Delta variant spread, that number rose all the way up to 48%. 48% of all hospitalized people in this study. Again, this was looking at the VA, but, you know, veterans aren't any different than anybody else. Veterans have heart attacks and break legs and do whatever. 48% of those people were in for something else. So you can just take all of the hospitalization numbers for, air quotes here in the studio, COVID, all the air quotes here in the studio, COVID hospitalizations, and you can just go ahead and cut, at least cut them in half. These are all people who were in the hospital with COVID, not from COVID, and even the Atlantic. I'm starting to get a little shine in my eye for the Atlantic. They're doing some kind of honest stories these days, probably really ticking off some people on the left who want to keep this hysteria going. Ran across this tweet yesterday. It was just interesting. You know, these are all just anecdotal stories. A tweeter named Chrissy Clark says, "Well, after getting the Pfizer vaccine and having COVID twice, I've been diagnosed with COVID for a third time. Symptoms are bad this time around. Prayers are always appreciated." I think the chances of this person having COVID three times are almost impossible. I had this conversation with a friend last night. We now know that the PCR test, through the CDC's own admission, couldn't really distinguish between the flu and COVID. So there's a very good chance. Here's just my guess on this woman, and I try to do a fact-based show, but so I'm going to just go ahead and tell you this is just maybe my guess. This is a girl who got the flu once, or COVID, and then the flu. The first two times, she had either one time she had the flu, one time she had COVID. Because if she had COVID, she would have the antibodies to fight it off a second time. There just is not a lot of people out there getting reinfected with the same disease against once they fought it off the first time. So I believe she probably had COVID once, the flu once. She thought that was two COVID cases. Her doctors told her it was two COVID cases. They love to label everything a COVID case. And then she got the shots, and she's probably suffering from some level of an adverse reaction to the shot. That's her third case, air quotes there. I don't have time to get through it, but I was looking at this, looking at the thread, you know, underneath there, and there are a lot of other people with these same kinds of things. I don't have time. It'd take me too long to search through there, but a lot of people commenting on this, just saying, but you know, this is where we are and stuff. This was, let's see if I find this thing here. This is a chart sent to me yesterday. Had a caller yesterday to Kim Wade's show that Alan Ramsey was hosting. It's really sick stuff. A woman said that, you know, she went to her doctor and she didn't want to get the shot. She's looking for ivermectin. Told the doctor she didn't want the shot. She said, "Well, I'm really worried about the side effects. It may not be good for me." The doctor said, "This shot has not killed one single person." There are medical professionals out there saying it. Alan Ramsey gave her the best advice. I was yelling at the radio, "Tell her to run away from that doctor." And Alan actually said to her, "You need to run from that doctor." I was cheering in my car as I was listening. This is in Europe, which has the European Union, England, Israel have got reporting systems that are so much better than the United States. We love to always talk about how we're the best in the world and everything, foam finger number one. But we're just not. They've got such better reporting systems. The EMA, that's the equivalent of the VAERS system here in the U.S. This is the EMA is the European reporting system on vaccine adverse events. Their adverse events are approaching 1 million people. Among them, according to the latest data, there are 262,383 severe cases and deaths. And it says here, increasingly including children. 262,383 severe cases of adverse reactions to the vaccine in Europe. And I believe the last thing I saw, their death count was somewhere around 18,000 of those were deaths. You know, and I'm just watching this thing roll out. They're coming after our kids with this thing. They refuse to acknowledge natural immunity. But the story on this just continues to get worse and worse. There are, close that story. I will say one thing here. I try to be as completely objective as possible. In this story, it did say, you know, I told you that people who had mild or asymptomatic cases of COVID in the hospital were being counted as COVID cases, about half of them in this VA study. For vaccinated hospital patients, the number rose to 57%. So 57% of the hospitalized people who were diagnosed with COVID, as far as having lighter symptoms, was higher in the vaccinated group than the unvaccinated group. I don't know what that means. It could mean there's some efficacy. Matter of fact, I saw a good chart on how maybe the vaccine works. I won't have time to get into it now, maybe next hour with Jameson or tomorrow. But anyway, back with Jameson Haygood when we come back. Stay with me. We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. And today, I've got a special guest in the studio today, Jameson Haygood from the 2 o'clock hour. Jameson, thanks for coming in.
Man, thanks for having me. I'm a Mike Madison fan. It's that simple. From the first time I moved here, obviously, I heard Kim Wade's first, right? He's 4-6. And then I thought that afternoon, I said, well, I can't wait to tune in to 103.9 the next day. And I found your show, and I'm a fan, man. It's an honor to be here with you.
It must be quite a thrill over there. Try to calm down. Try not to be too nervous sitting with me here. I know I've got to be very intimidating to you.
Well, any time we were going to have a conversation where we were 100% going to agree, now that's not intimidating at all, but going up against the libertarian thought leader in Middle Mississippi, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I'm the underdog here.
Well, you come from the more popular region, so I'll set this up for people.
All right.
So, Jameson did a show a couple of weeks ago, was talking about, and he and I are of like mind of the vaccine. We probably agree on darn near every single thing about it.
Sure.
But the point that you made that day that I thought was really good was, I mean, it come down to bodily autonomy. Can the government force you to inject your body with something really against your will? And it's gotten to the point where it is just flat out coercion now. I mean, they're talking about making your life horrible if you don't take this thing socially. They're firing employees. They're taking away their way to earn a living. And it's gotten even worse now with Joe Biden's executive order. You know, now they've gotten to a situation where if you had one of these employers that forced this vaccine, you could quit with some ideas. Well, I'll just go work somewhere else. Well, boy, Joe Biden just tried to shut a bunch of doors by telling every company that has more than 100 employees they've got to have their staffs vaxxed. So suddenly then, you are a person without many prospects. So it's just gotten worse. So Jameson came on and he was talking about bodily autonomy. So I caught him out in the hall afterward and I said, as my annoying intellectual libertarian self does with a lot of different issues, I said, all right, so if you've got bodily autonomy, and this is the root of the call, the root of the argument, you control what goes into your body and the government cannot force you to put something into your body. I said, is not the flip side of that true? You control your body and the government cannot tell you what you cannot put in your body. And this is part of my war on the war on drugs, where I am a radical freedom lover and believe that the government, even though, and I want to start this in a second with us agreeing on a bunch of stuff, I'm a radical freedom lover and all of the messiness that comes with that.
Sure.
I believe that freedom is not, it's not pretty a lot of times, but it's always better than the alternative. You and I would agree on a lot of things. Drugs wreck people's lives. Drugs can be absolutely horrible for particularly children whose brains and bodies are still developing, all of these things. So this is not a, and my stance is never a pro-drug
thing. I understand.
Thing. You know,
right.
If any listener wants to come, you know, because I always think that there's people listening to my show. The first week I came on, I replaced Herman Cain, the establishment Republican, because he stopped his syndication. I come on that first week and start talking about ending the drug war, and I think we got some phone calls of people saying, "What the hell is going on up there?"
Yeah.
You can come pee test me. I'm completely clean. I'm not wearing, Jameson can testify, I'm not wearing any tie-dye right now.
You look great. I can tell you do your and your hump day health thing, man. I'm with you. You're right.
So I'm no radical hippie, so this is not a pro-drug thing. It is really an argument against the idea that the government really has any say-so over your body whatsoever. So that's where we started. Your take on that is what?
Yeah, so I agreed with you that this issue as far as the vax mandates, what government can forcibly, almost literally, they're holding you down. Like the root, the end of the issue is they'll hold you down and jab this in you. We've already seen that happen. And so there are similarities as far as this is an issue of what government can and cannot do to your body. However, I am saying that there's a major difference, I would say rather big difference, and a more pressing priority when you talk about the issue of what government is setting up and planning and laying out. We heard Fauci. And so you were kind of tracking with that. Well, so initially, I know you were never making the argument that this is an apples to apples deal. You were saying just as far as bodily autonomy, you know, how does the reverse is not the case, that you say?
Well, I guess where I come from on this and what I try to tell people, and it's overused, the term slippery slope. But what I see a lot of conservatives do, I see a lot of conservatives cheer for the government outlawing smoking in restaurants. I don't like to go into a smoky restaurant. It stinks. It's bad for the people's health. There's all kinds of problems with that. But conservatives couldn't wait for the free market to fix that, which it would have.
Because, it would have.
Yeah, smoking was going out of favor. A lot of people were not smoking, were getting sick of it. Restaurants were already going non-smoking and getting that section. But conservatives couldn't wait for that, so they wanted the government to step in and force businesses to shut down or not allow smoking in there. So they thought that was a big victory. A lot of Republicans voted for those things. I was stunned, and it was really before I was a big libertarian. I just thought, well, that seems overarching. But then, over the past year, they're outraged that the government could come in and say your business isn't essential, that you can only have 25% occupancy. And I believe there is that slippery slope. So I believe that the war on drugs, this idea that I do not have the freedom, and we all have freedom to take drugs. We don't have the liberty to take drugs. That I can be put into a cage if I sit on my couch at home and smoke a plant. That is a gateway to authoritarianism of, we can not only tell you what you can't put in your body, we can tell you what you're going to put in your body.
I would agree. I would say that is inarguable, the situation you just laid out there. And here's the analogy why I don't hold that position all the way down, depending on the particular substance. It's like this. And let me use your family for an example, if you don't mind. So if your son comes in and he says, Dad, if you don't mind, I'm going to step outside and smoke a cigarette real quick, and I'll come back in. We'll finish this conversation. Okay, that's Mike responds one way in that case. Now, if he pulls out a line of crystal meth and says, if you don't mind, you know, I'm going to rail this crystal meth real quick right now, and then we'll get back to this conversation, I would expect you have a responsibility to respond to those different substances going into the body in a different way.
Absolutely.
Okay, in that same way, in a representative republic, so can we elect certain people that have a government that responds to different substances the same way. So in other words, I'm not faced with a false dichotomy of central planning or complete nihilism. Smoking's right here. Mainlining heroin is right here. And the end result of this, I'll let you speak of this, is that I would say only in a utopian world is a heroin user or a meth user or an LSD user a victimless crime. I'm saying it is absolutely impossible in real time and real space for heroin even once to be a victimless crime.
You know, heroin was legal in the United States up till about 1910.
Yeah, sure.
Certainly, we built a big, you know, heroin was actually available at pharmacies back until 1910. And so, but you and I can both admit the war on drugs does not work.
Right. Certainly. No, it does not work. But that's the federal war on drugs. But at some point, we do have little mini labs right now that we're not arguing this or having this conversation in an empty vacuum. I mean, we have the cities actually functioning just like they should right now in one way. So we can look at what happens when government says Bring your matter of fact, we'll supply you with the syringes. Bring come one, come all to the perfect utopian land of freedom, San Francisco, where a man can lie with another man and you can also mainline heroin. You got some meth? Let's rail it, buddy. You got some LSD? Let's rock with that. And so we here in this community, we say we have an example of what that does when you pull away completely and use nihilism. And we say we do not want to support that here. We don't want that brought here because that will actually infringe on our individual rights of raising families and our property value rights in that way. So it's a clear, a full stop when it comes to those types of substances, because it's impossible to have individual freedoms and individual private property rights while that stuff is condoned by the government.
Yeah, so I would disagree with some of those things. The one thing, that the example that you gave with my child, you're exactly right. If my son comes home and talks about a cigarette or doing crystal meth, I do respond differently. But that's exactly why I don't want the government involved. My child is my responsibility. Even a friend of mine that came over, I would feel I would want to intervene on their crystal meth use because they are my, they are a friend, somebody that I love. Our government does not love us. And I don't believe that the government should be a parental unit to us. It would be my responsibility, you know, for my children to not do drugs. The government's not keeping my kids off of drugs. I mean, we can't keep drugs out of prisons.
Right.
So all of these laws, the people that I know and love, but particularly my children, the reason my children are not drug users is because I've spent a lot of time with them telling them not to be drug users. If at some point they turn into drug users, then I'll try to intervene on their behalf, just strictly out of the health issues of it. I don't want a government mommy or daddy. And I think we outsource these things to the government to do it. And it doesn't work. Number one, we've never had so much addiction. We've never had so many other things. To the point of there being a dividing line in substance, I think that when you get back to the bodily autonomy thing, what you do there is you're drawing a line and you're saying you do have bodily autonomy until it's something that is that I don't approve of you having. Do you know there are a lot of recreational heroin users who do not have systemic addiction problems that they're, and I didn't even know this till about 3 or 4 years ago, and I did some research on it. There are people who will recreationally, and I'm not recommending this.
Yeah.
They will recreationally use crack. Never harm another person. Somebody might do, there's probably a lot of people who say, oh, that's just crap. I used to think if you took a hit of crack cocaine, you were an addict from then on. Mm-hmm. You know, it always scared the pee out of me. I never tried cocaine when I was young because I thought it would grab a hold of me. I'd like it too much and go on. And I still, to this day, never have. There are a lot of recreational users of all kinds of drugs. Again, heroin was legal until around 1910, early 1900s. We didn't have the streets of the country littered with addicts and stuff. So when you draw this line over what you say, okay, well, I think we're okay with medical marijuana. If you've got a problem, we'll let you alter your brain chemistry there because it also addresses some pain. But then you bring the government to go, but we still really don't like cocaine, and you schedule these drugs. That's still a bodily autonomy issue, and it is reliant on the bureaucrats we hate, on the politicians we hate. These things don't work. It doesn't stop people from doing drugs. There's just huge societal costs around the prohibition of just about everything. Now, there are certainly costs to drugs themselves, to families, to people who do get addicted. But there are also costs to the people who drink too much. But we don't presuppose. I mean, you go to the liquor store right now, you can find a little liqueur that's 20 proof, or you can go get you a bottle of Fireball. It's about 190 proof.
Right.
And you just take three drinks of Fireball, and you're a threat to yourself and others. I'm telling you, I've seen it in action being in the bar business before. So the idea of potency and all of those things, too, it seems like that genie's already out of the bag. We've allowed this one level of intoxication with no equivocation. There's no controls over how much of alcohol you can have. You can drink an entire bottle of Everclear if you want to.
In a bar.
Or at home.
You know, because in a bar, we already regulate that as far as, I mean, we do something that's terrible, by the way, which is blame you as a business owner if you run a bar or a bartender personally for somebody ingesting too much, which I'm against that. But there's a little bit of limitation there. But I would still say, you know, using this discretion, just because government can't fully stop something doesn't mean we shouldn't use discretion in certain areas and certain substances to still to try to not condone that, to try to lessen that activity, and try to make as little as possible of options for individuals to participate in that. So once again, if your epistemic process there is comparing alcohol to crystal meth, I believe that's a complete non sequitur. I believe the fact that you have to reach that deep to compare those two is a little bit of weakness in the argument, proving my point exactly that government should use some discretion between a bottle of Fireball and a bag of crystal meth. And let me speak to that specifically. You know, when you talk about this recreational heroin user that's not bothering anybody, is that kind of I want to make sure I'm clear. I would say that person only exists in Utopianville along with the Marxist Utopianville, right? But they're next doors.
No, it happened last weekend.
I know. Well, let me explain why it's impossible. Because that person on his couch or on his back porch overlooking a beautiful lake, whether he snorts it or if he injects heroin, if he could snap his fingers and it could just appear out of thin air, then that might be one thing to help your argument a little more, but he can't do that. There's a whole manufacturing process with this poison that attracts the absolute worst
but
of our globe.
Why is the supply chain for it so dangerous and violent and everything else?
Because anybody who would deal in that kind type of poison is not somebody who will ever respect your individual rights.
No, because it's illegal. Because these are all criminals who do it. But
right.
Prior to 1910, you didn't have street gangs running. I mean, you know,
sure.
There's kind of two arguments here that we're probably conflating a little bit. There's the war on drugs, which is a catastrophic failure.
Which I agree.
Yeah, and so I kind of like to talk about that
Down
the road, because obviously you think there might be a different way to do it. But then there's the bodily autonomy thing.
Sure.
The reason that that person, you say that the supply chain to get that heroin to him is so bad, it's because of the making it illegal. You've told the criminal class, the worst among us, you be in charge of the heroin supply chain. We're going to let guys in $3,000 suits run Maker's Mark and run the wineries and run these other things. They don't shoot it out in the streets. There's no battles between Jose Cuervo and an Absolute Vodka. They settle their differences in court. They have a product. So, but as soon as you made alcohol illegal, then Al Capone was in charge of doing it.
Sure.
A violent drug, a violent gangster.
Sure.
So that's the reason to trace that back and say that this heroin user is responsible for the supply chain. No, the system is responsible for a violent supply chain.
Well, I want to answer that. I know we're up against a break, so I want to. If we don't mind, let's stay right there, because I want to answer you on my epistemology behind why I would still hold to that position on the manufacturing side, even if it was legal. I don't have time to get through that right now.
Yeah,
I won't send
long.
You to break. You're the boss here. But,
no, we're going long. I'm going to be terrible with my time today, because this is an engrossing conversation. And I want to take calls, too, but we've got a lot to talk about. I've been dying to have this conversation.
I'm
thrilled you came in.
You're the best. Yeah, thank you, buddy.
All right.
Yeah.
Talking to Jameson Haygood here. We're kind of debating bodily autonomy, whether we should be able to either ingest what we want or reject anything we don't want with our own bodies. We'll do that when we come back. Stay with us.
I went home with a waitress, the way I always do. How was I to know she was with the Russians too?
All right, so we're here in Fight Club. Jameson Haygood and Mike Madison are in Fight Club here, and I want this to be an example to everybody that you can have good, vigorous debate and disagreement on something, and then leave as good friends, which is what I love to do with everybody. So it's always good to have these kinds of debates. So you were going to address the supply chain of heroin and why you believe that the government should prohibit someone from doing heroin. And one of the reasons is because of the supply chain. So go ahead.
At the very least, it does not need to open up and condone it. And
what would be the definition of condone? Do you believe the government condones alcohol use or condones fatty
foods? Yes, it does. You know, it regulates it enough to allow it as you opt.
Just makes it acceptable.
So you could walk in on the corner store at John Smith's, straight whiskey store, even, right? Not even, not even beer or wine, just John Smith's Fireball store.
Yeah,
you know, and you could do that because that is more margin for error. That is actually a little bit of a benefit to the economy in certain ways and can be used in moderation enough where government makes the discretionary call, almost like you would. I admit you're right. Government is not the first institution. The family is, but almost in the same way that you would discern between the two substances, government can function that way too. Now, I know I'm asking government to be discretionary. I'm not asking the federal government to do that. I'm not asking the ATF to do that or the DEA to do that. I'm asking to give states the rights to discern between different substances. And I'll flesh that out for you here on the legal. You're saying, look, we have criminals involved with the production of heroin or crystal meth, but let's stay with heroin, okay? My argument would still be that you're going to have individual rights. And another thing, Mike, I want to be clear on as well, that we both agree on, that we want to vehemently stand for individual rights. Forget the collective. You know, on my radio show, we call it we the person. It's not even we the people. And I believe you defend the rights of the collective by taking care of the individual. So every step we make in my position on what government limits an individual to do would be in order to preserve individual rights. So here we go. Today, let's say today they authorized crystal meth and heroin to be manufactured and sold right here in the Cotton Exchange Plaza studio. I submit to you that the kind of people that would go put the payment down on the storefront and build up, you know, John Smith's best crystal meth in the history of the world and start selling that to people will be empowering and enriching people, that the end result will destroy individual rights themselves. Like, they themselves cannot be people that we as a society collective, giving the consent of the governor to the government, would ever want to empower and embolden. So I'm making a clear statement. I'll let you go. I'm making a clear statement that if today crystal meth and heroin were legalized and you could sell it right beside the alcohol store down here, the kind of person that would run to doing that is a person that we would never want to empower, enrich, embolden in any way.
Do you think that argument was made in 1927 by the teetotalers out there who said we got to keep liquor illegal because the kind of people that would open up a liquor store and provide this intoxicant to the people out there is not the kind of person we want?
Yes, I do.
And today we've got people, you know, liquor store owners and wine merchants that are great advertisers
guys.
Here right on WYAB.
There you go. And I've met them. I do believe that argument. We know that argument was made, right? We can look back at history and see that argument was made. And that's where I've still fall back. And by the way, I've thought about this hundreds of hours. It's like when I come on and I crack this Bible open or something, a lot of times I get emails and I get emails from people as if I haven't considered a certain option when I go to crack this thing open. And while I'm not the most studied, I've spent a lot of time going over my epistemological processes, why I come to something being true. So that being said, I'm still saying, it seems to me an outlandish, even a reaching argument, that now I have to still go back to that person and explain the difference between alcohol and crystal meth. And this is from me personally, why I would hold this position. The fact that I still got to go back to that person and say, okay, I thought we were talking about crystal meth here and not alcohol, because alcohol is for sale right down the road.
Well, I think that, you know, like I say, we've got a couple of different arguments kind of going here. The distinctions between one drug and the other. I will submit this. I don't believe crystal meth would even be an issue if you had legalized marijuana, legalized heroin, legalized everything else. And again, for anybody tuning in, I'm not pushing these drugs. I'm just telling you, crystal meth, largely, just like fentanyl, are reactions to prohibition. So crystal meth, what they did is they said, golly, it's hard to get marijuana here. We can't get cocaine. We get busted for that. But I tell you what, if we take a ton of these chemicals and put them together and they noodled around with us and they've got this horrible cooking process, they make this horribly dangerous, terrible product, but you probably wouldn't have, if you took the drug trade and gave it to respectable business owners who felt they wanted good customers. They wanted repeat customers. They had a reputation made. Same as liquor stores. We got good liquor store owners who just want to provide a product to somebody. They wouldn't be selling some crystal meth stuff that rotted your teeth out. They would give you intoxicants to get the same effect from things that were safe and would keep you healthier. Not that it's all social good to it. I mean, there's a lot of social damage that comes out of the liquor stores here for people that can't handle liquor, for people who drink and drive. Those kinds of things. But I think crystal meth and fentanyl are just two great examples of what happens because of the war on drugs. And so not a good argument to say, well, we need to keep everything illegal because of crystal meth. I mean, because crystal meth is so bad. I just don't think crystal meth would probably even exist. Nobody would have had to search for that recipe because nobody would have needed it.
Well, exercised a little bit of discernment between the substances, which is all I'm arguing here today, as far as that a representative republic, people I would represent to go represent or elect to go represent us in Jackson, can use that same type of discernment to pick and choose between certain substances as far as the margin of error and any good that can possibly come out of it. And so I'll even go up. I'm just saying that. I'll say, so as I sit here before you, I want to acknowledge that I am saying that there is a limit to your certain bodily autonomy, not on what can be forced into it, but what can be restricted to be put in on it because of the fact that the end result of the manufacturing process, the marketing, the empowering of those who would sell poison, and the actual victim themselves, which would be the one taking it.
But if it was legal, people wouldn't sell poison.
Well, it would still be poison, right? If it was heroin.
I believe you would get... I mean, people use heroin for a long period of time. And I know this sounds like I am trying to normalize heroin or anything like that. It wrecks a ton of people's lives. But if you read the actual study, and this goes against a lot of people's emotional knee-jerk reactions to it, people have used heroin for centuries. I mean, just centuries and centuries. There are people who are functioning heroin users. We've got a whole... You know, we've got rock stars that did heroin for 20 years and then they quit. So you would have a product that, number one, is safer. I'm not saying it's good in any way, shape, or form, because ultimately what I'm talking about is freedom and minimizing harm.
I understand.
When you put it into the black market, you get things like crystal meth. You get fentanyl. There would not be, if you had legalized drug, there would not be a single store that ever sold cocaine or heroin laced with fentanyl. Because it would kill their people. Drug dealers right now don't do it. It is that criminal class, because of the black market, that cuts their stuff with fentanyl to make it more potent in smaller packets to avoid detection. Fentanyl is a consequence. It's a result of the war on drugs. So I guess my point is, just like the liquor store owner does not buy moonshine off the back of someone's truck when they pull up, they get private label Evan Williams, Jack Daniels, Sutter Home Wines. You know, they get good quality stuff. I think that you would see that same thing if it was a legalized system where you just allowed people the freedom to do what they're going to do anyway.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. I tell you what. Well, yeah. Let's take a break real quick, because I'm going to
perfect time
do terrible management perfect of my timing. Time. So okay. All right, we're talking to Jameson Haygood here. We're doing a little bit of tay-to-tay on the drug war and what we have the ability to put into our bodies. I know we've been getting some callers. Jameson and I are both, we've got so much we want to say. I haven't taken them, but if you want to call when we get back, 601-879-0002. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and I got my good buddy Jameson Haygood in studio. We're kind of debating drug war, what the government should and should not either force you to put into your body or deny you the ability. And we should have been recording off air. Jameson came over here and punched me during the break. It really was very aggressive. I'm terrified. I would
never, because I know if I didn't if I didn't get you in the first 10 seconds, you would beat me very bad, because I'm out of shape.
Jameson's a big guy. He said, I want to come on the second hour of your show. I just, okay, Mr. Haygood, whatever you need to do. All right, so let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
These are usually the most effective things that I know to do. If We really have got two parallel arguments going here, so I guess we need to try to settle in on one of the two. Let's talk about bodily autonomy and the government's ability to regulate what you put in your body, because that's where we got started, and it started with the vaccine saying the government shouldn't be allowed to force something into our body, and my counter to that is the government also shouldn't be able to stop you from putting things into your body. Sure. I could go through the grocery store and put a bunch of red X's on things that people should never be consuming.
Right.
We see the societal cost and the healthcare cost of people eating horrible food, but I do not make that presumption. I would rather educate people, and sure. I think that's the approach should be to drugs. If I, and again, I can take a clean pee test. Anybody wants to come up here and test me? I'm not advocating for any drug use.
Right.
But if I had done heroin this past weekend at my home by myself recreationally, do you believe that I should be in a cage right now?
No. And but I do believe you had just extended fellowship and you had just promoted and supported a very dark, destructive industry that you would never want to really be a part of, that will end in the destruction of your freedom, that is currently functioning in all types of human and sex trafficking, because it all goes together. It cannot be separated, to which you are going to say, well, we should legalize it.
Yeah, because right. The reason it is, you know, it's so funny to me to watch people talk about the cartels in Mexico and their human trafficking of people across the border. And they're right. They're definitely doing that. And it's absolutely horrible. But to that, I tell people, well, you know how the cartels got so big, how they have this organization put together of hundreds of thousands. I mean, Mexico's a narco state down there. They run the governments in large parts of Mexico. And the reason they do that is because of black market drugs. I mean, these criminals are exactly like Al Capone was to Chicago. Al Capone picked political leaderships of Chicago during alcohol prohibition. The cartels are Al Capone now in the prohibition of the war on drugs. And so you're right. Anybody who does drugs today is definitely enriching some really, really horrible people. But that's not because of the substance they're taking. It is because of the laws that have forced it into the shadows, into the black market. When I drink, Maker's Mark, and I do, when I drink Maker's Mark, I'm providing jobs. I'm helping a lot of very good people. I'm keeping truck drivers in. You know, it's a very good thing. Both things, and again, we won't distinguish between drugs, but, you know, if I'm seeking to relax or alter my brain chemistry or whatever, either one of those things, the only reason that the heroin, as far as the supply chain goes, is because of the laws, not because of the substance.
Well, I would say the benefit to the economy with in regards to alcohol is a good trade-off. It's okay to make that trade-off, but when you step down to heroin and you legitimize and you start to regulate the heroin production, well, then that trade-off would become too much and so government would use its discretion. It would say, this is where we're going to cut the line off. Yes, you can regulate, and there's a little benefit of our economy to for alcohol, but yet when it comes to heroin, there's absolutely no legitimate benefit. We can't defend individual rights if heroin is legitimized and regulated and sold on the street corner with the approval of the state.
Okay. We got a caller on the line, and if the caller agrees with me, I'll let them speak, and if they don't agree with me, I'm going to cut them off. Caller, are you with us?
I am, and I do agree with you.
All right.
I think many of these illicit products are basically worthless. If there was not a market created by the laws we have in place, what is weed worth? It's called weed for a reason.
Exactly.
You could grow it anywhere.
You're very right about that. And, you know, that's one of the arguments, too, that people make. You know, they say, well, if you legalize drugs, you're going to have everybody running around doing heroin. And to just about every person I say, is the only reason you don't go do heroin tonight because it's against the law? No. The reason most people don't do heroin is because they don't want to be a heroin addict. They don't want to do heroin. So this idea that you know, as soon as you open up these things, everybody's going to be doing them and there's going to be addicts everywhere is not borne out by either historical examples or even some contemporary examples of decriminalization. But go ahead, caller.
Well, I have been in countries where if you knew the name of whatever it is you wanted, you could go to a pharmacy and buy it. People weren't dropping dead in the street.
Right.
And if you take something and like weed, let's take weed. We know anybody can grow it. If you open the store you couldn't charge enough of that stuff to pay your overhead.
Yeah, if they allowed you to grow it at your house. If you had true freedom here where they said, if you want to grow a plant and ingest it in your backyard, and we can do that with corn and with soybeans and with grains, we can even grow our own grains. We can then distill them and turn them into an intoxicant at any time. But for some reason, if we just decide to smoke a plant rather than ferment a plant, then we're in trouble. So it's very arbitrary.
So my overall view of this is that our governments are trying to protect their workforce. They don't want people overly content.
There could be something to that. Jameson, what do you say?
Yeah, I would say that the marijuana legalization process that's gone on recreationally is these different states, whether it's Colorado or California or a number of places, the results are already in. Marijuana use is soaring. I have the hill.com pulled up right here. Marijuana use soars among college students while alcohol use drops.
Right.
So there you go. I mean, so legalizing it, make it more readily available, will increase the amount of people. It won't be everybody, but everybody, there will be more heroin users. If you have Acme heroin right down here the street and you legalize it, you'll have more heroin users.
We might go through a period of time when we lose a lot of people. And I think there's some term about survival of the fittest. So it might not be that bad a thing.
Yeah, well, as a born-again Bible believer, I have to hold to the Romans 13 God-ordained definition, me personally, of that, you know, rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. So and rulers are the minister of God to thee for good. So in order for the local government that I sign off on, a representative that I send up there, I would want them to be discerning and choose between, like you came on and used marijuana. Well, that's not the topic. The topic isn't marijuana. It's, can we authorize a legitimate government to discern between marijuana and then something that is absolutely, completely has no positive impact on the globe at all, which is heroin.
Well, that's possible. But go create a new country and write a new constitution.
No, this constitution was based off of these founding principles of nature's law and nature's God. That's what I'm defending.
But
that,
if pursuit of happiness,
you would have to do that, sir.
If my pursuit of happiness meant that I wanted to sit in my living room and do heroin, I do not have that. That's not
right.
Part a constitutionally protected ability of mine to just make that choice for myself.
No,
even if you think it's bad,
because there's no way to do that and then protect the individual rights of others. So that's where it stops.
I don't understand that argument. How am I infringing on anybody's individual rights if I go to my house and I do heroin?
Can you snap your fingers right now and make a bag of heroin?
Well, no, but you're talking about the infrastructure that's put in because it's illegal. It's like you create a system to make it illegal, which creates the bad supply chain, and then you blame me for the bad supply chain and say I can't do it because of the system
right.
You created for
so
it.
So if you legalize heroin today and you can have Acme heroin write it down here, who's going to come out of the woodworks and sell that poison?
No,
the best among society?
I think that you're about to see it with medical marijuana. You're going to
now you've compared marijuana to heroin again. See, that's
the pharmacies. So you mean to tell me that all the pharmacies that sold heroin back in the 1800s in the United States, at the pharmacy, they sold heroin.
Right, I understand. Sold cocaine, too.
Right. Those were all horrific drug-dealing thugs because there's no record of that.
No.
These were mom-and-pop pharmacies. Heroin was well-recognized for pain, for all kinds of things.
Sure.
Like you say, cocaine was known to be used. The Peruvians still use cocaine. So it wasn't this. Now, today it might be. Because of the black market that the prohibition has created, you've created this group of criminals where there were none before.
You know, I'm saying now we have a representative government, so we use our founding documents of the land to be the consent of the governed, and we've elected people who've said there are certain substances that cannot be ingested because the end result is an infringement on individual rights.
Well, we've also elected a group of people who have now said that certain substances can be forced into your arm.
Exactly.
And this is the root of the argument. These
right.
same people that you're trusting their discernment on one side, and the other side you challenge. I would challenge that a political class has no level of discernment we should recognize.
Sure. And one is saying we are not going to condone you putting this in your body. Another one is saying we're about to force, we're going to hold you down and we're going to force this poison into your body. So one is saying you can't, and legally, we're not going to sign off on you legally ingesting
poison. Well, no, it's not that, that tame. Poison. It's not that they don't sign off on it. If you inject, if you ingest heroin, or and we keep using heroin, it really doesn't matter, any drug. There's right. plenty of them. You know, PTSD, mushrooms. I mean,
sure.
there's all,
sure.
PTSD is a condition.
Right.
Anyway, any of these things, they will put you into a cage. It's mm-hmm. not just that they don't condone it. It's that they will kick down the door of your home for sitting on your couch and doing mushrooms or ecstasy or any of these drugs, because the discernment of the ruling class right now is there's no dividing line. Marijuana is the same as crack, is the same as heroin, is the same as crystal meth. It's all, they will kick down your door, snatch you off the couch, put you into a cage, destroy your life, and put you on the taxpayer dole, because these people that have been in charge, that you're trusting for this discernment, you're saying, they have created a system that has created gangs and put people into cages for a personal choice.
Well, and on limiting those people and those federal agents from doing that, you and I will definitely agree.
All right, we got to take there a break. Caller, hey, thanks for calling in if you're still hanging in with us. I know we kind of bulldozed over you there a little bit.
I'll call again sometime.
Excellent. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate it. All right, got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. All right, we've only got a couple minutes left. Jameson, sure. I want you back on for this. I think this is a good time. I think people are interested in this topic. We've had a bunch of calls. I haven't taken them. I apologize to people. I didn't take the calls. I knew I'd run short. Jameson right. and I both like to talk. That's why we do what we do for a living.
Yeah.
But I think there's other things to cover on this. We've only got a minute left. Closing words
yeah,
on this?
No, I mean, just mainly a thank you, and it's a lot of fun.
You
and,
tell
and
me
these
I won?
Issues, right,
you
right.
tell me I well, won. Already, I've changed your mind. I've won the debate, and everybody's
you already
on my
raised raised your hands in victory the first time in the middle of my show when you hit me with a thought experience experiment. But no, look, I start where I left off, Mike. I consider it an honor. I try to earn my place here daily at WYAB. I'm simply a WYAB fan that got the shot to have his own show. Having you on, having these conversations or what needs to happen just to challenge my epistemology and what I believe is true and not too. So, man, it's an honor. We pulled it off. I knew we could.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming in. We'll continue this conversation. That's Jameson Haygood. Check him out today at 2:00. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.